Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And today, I ask the question, where do we begin? What is going on in our country? Let's look at the Biden administration. Now, I am one that says, no matter what happened, hopefully the truth will come out. But as of right now, Joe Biden is our president. And therefore, we should support our president in any way that we possibly can. Now, the reality is that doesn't mean we have to agree with his policies, because I believe his policies are detrimental to our country and to our citizenry. So, is he an effective president? Let's ask that question. Or, really, as I've heard him compared to recently, this is the second coming of the Jimmy Carter administration. Now, I was a young person during the Jimmy Carter administration. My first election where I could vote was 1980. And Jimmy Carter was the president. I was a young man of 18 years old. I had suffered through a couple of years of the Jimmy Carter administration. The interest rates were 12, 14, 15%, which was unbelievable. My first mortgage that I got in 1981, I got my first mortgage, remortgaged my mother's house. And the interest rates, it was a variable rate kind of a mortgage. And it was 10%, 12%, 14% over the 3 years where it would level off. And we thought that was a good rate because rates even got even higher at the time. Kind of crazy. We saw our military was in disarray. We saw the Iran crisis, the original Iran crisis, when our hostages were taken. And we watched President Carter fiddle-faddle around with, of course, a very difficult situation. We can't take away from the fact that he was not strong. He took a different tack on what we would do with those hostages. Because obviously, if he attacked Iran to try and save the hostages, they probably would have all been executed. And that would have been horrific. So he tried to bide his time. But of course, what happens is when you bide your time with people like that, and it dragged on for 444 days. A lot of people believe that that was one of the major factors that led to him being a one-term president. And the ascension of Ronald Reagan, Reynaldus Magnus, as the great Rush Limbaugh used to call him. So I look back at that and I remember the difficulty, the gas lines. I remember the problems with the interest rates. I remember with the malaise. You know, they talk about it. I didn't call it a malaise when I was a young person, but I felt it. You didn't feel like there was any jobs you were going to get. We were finishing high school and we didn't know what we were going to do. And it was not a good time for America. And then, you know, Ronald Reagan ushered in a new age of the shining city on the hill, so to speak. And I remember that transformation of our country. I remember how it went from depression to all of a sudden people were feeling good again. The military was strong again. We felt America was back. And that was a wonderful feeling. But unfortunately, Jimmy Carter will go down in history as a failed president. He did make, some peace initiatives between Israel and Egypt. I thought that was a good thing. So even a stopped clock is right twice a day. So that's what I'm saying. When we compare the Joe Biden presidency to what's going on in the world, we say to ourselves, is he a good president? Now, we know he's a wheeler and a dealer. This is the guy who spent, 47 years in Congress and the Senate, and basically didn't get anything done of value, but he made out pretty good for himself, didn't he? He made pretty good for himself. He has a couple of mansions, beach houses, and this and that. It's amazing what you can do on $200,000 a year. I'd like to know where I get my mansions and my beach houses, you know, when I can earn that kind of a salary, because I've looked at them, and they're completely out of the price range for someone making a regular normal income. Even someone making $250,000 a year is not going to have beach houses all over the place. So, Mr. Biden, why don't you give us a lesson on that as president? Here's how you too can have multiple mansions and beach houses making $200,000 a year. But I digress, as a man with a grievance often does. Is he a good president? Is he a good representative for us? Well, one of his positives is that supposedly he knows all these world leaders and they like Joe Biden, right? They like Joe. He does seem like an amiable card dealer. That's what he reminds me of. When you go to the casino and that guy's standing back there, he's going to flip you the cards for blackjack. He smiles. He's nice. He says nice things to you. When you win, he congratulates you. You know, when you lose, he's he comforts you a little bit. That's kind of what Joe Biden's like, a backslapper, a classic politician, a classic politician. But is that what the world needs? I saw a statement the other day about the G7 meeting, and one of these left-wing news reporters came out and said, the world was so grateful to have boring Joe Biden as opposed to Trump, who what he did. Well, you know what he did? He made NATO, and I'm talking about Trump, he made NATO pay their fair share. He got these other countries in line that they couldn't take advantage of America. Right now, we're going back to being taken advantage of. We're going back to the Iran deal. Joe Biden is working on going back to the Iran deal. How that's good for America? Because first of all, to say that the Iran deal is a good deal, we have to pretend that the Iranians are actually going to abide by it. See, this is part of our world today, is pretend. We have to pretend so many things that we know are not true. But if you don't pretend them, then you're not with it. And this is going to be one of our downfalls. If I was to live in the year, oh, let's see, it's 2021 now. So if I was to live in the year 2121, and I look back at this, hopefully that person that would be writing about this era would say, this was the most bizarre, out of control, illogical, foolish period in American history. And I don't know what they would call it, the foolish period of American history. When we have so many things that we ignore fact, we follow the science, and then the science says to be done with the masks and be done with the lockdown and all that, but we're not going to follow that science. But when you say, hey, maybe it came from the Wuhan lab, you are a conspiracy nut because we can't say anything bad about the Chinese. So pretend that it didn't come from there. You know, all these other woke things that are going on, we have to pretend. Instead of just dealing with people as human beings, we have to pretend all these different things. Instead of just being tolerant of different cultures, we have to pretend all these different things. So it's unfortunate for us that this is a very foolish time. That we look at Joe Biden, who, you know, he was pretty sharp, I guess, a couple of years ago. But when I see that guy today, he's not very sharp. How is he going to sit there in a meeting with Vladimir Putin, one of the world's villains, who's pretty slick? How's he going to sit there with President Xi and hold his own? How's he going to hold their feet to the fire? He's not. He's not. And is that good for America? That is not good for America. That is a problem. So we're going to go back to the Iranian deal. We're going to pretend that they're going to follow it. We're all going to clap. All the clapping seals on the left-wing news channels are going to clap about how Joe Biden has done the right thing for safety of the world. And everyone's going to be thinking, oh, he got us back to the Iran deal, got us away from evil orange man's hateful plans with the Iranians, and now we are all safe. Of course, we're all safe until they ignite a nuclear bomb in Israel, right? Or on some other area where there's American troops are stationed or something. Then we'll look back and go, gee, who thought that was a good idea? Can we really trust the Iranians? What have they done to show we can trust them? Is there anything? I'll wait. I'll say, no, we can't trust them. So therefore, we do not give them trust. Okay? To trust them is foolish. This is a foolish time in our American history. To pretend that Joe Biden is going to do anything against China, where obviously it's, well, I take the word obviously back. Let's say it really looks like a smoking gun that the Biden family has been enriched by Chinese money. And it looks like his son got money from the Chinese for influence. That's all. Not for anything particular. You know, we have to pretend that we see Hunter Biden because he worked for all of these companies, that he wasn't really selling influence to his father. We have to pretend that when Joe Biden says, oh, I was on an airplane with my son to China. What the hell was his son doing on Air Force One or Air Force Two going to China back in the day? What was he going there for, right? That they flew back. And what is it, 16, 17, 18-hour flight back? They didn't talk about, hey, Hunter, what'd you do while you were there? We didn't talk about it at all. And the news media just all Well, of course, they said they didn't talk about it, so they didn't talk about it. That's it. Do you really believe they didn't have a conversation about this? No, but you have to pretend. And if you don't pretend that that's the truth, then you are a hater, you're a liar, you're a conspiracy nut, you are a Trumper. And therefore, you want to, you know, say these things. It's foolishness that I'm looking at. And foolishness, what happens to the fool in just about any written work? When you have a written work, a play, a movie, and a person is a fool, do they end up being the hero? Does the fool end up winning the game, getting the girl, solving the problem? No. The fool usually falls flat on their face, alone and disgraced. And I'm afraid that's what we're heading for, right? We're heading for that. Now, I don't want to be down. You know, you've been listening for a long time here, Chasing Justice, and I go up and down, like a manic person between being depressed about the future and being positive about the future. I am mostly positive, but I'm concerned. Let's put it that way. I'm concerned because I don't know that we can fix the corruption that is taking place in our voting system, in our country, in our media, in our government, in our courts. The corruption is almost complete. And how do you come back from that? How do you come back for it when half of our country, maybe more than half of the people in our country, are okay with the corruption and in fact applaud the corruption because it suits their needs, it suits their beliefs, it suits what they want to talk about or live like or whatever. You know, people believe this socialism is really going to help us. And if you don't think that socialism is the right way, if you think capitalism is right, then you are a hater, you are an oppressor, socialism is the only way to go. We have to pretend that. What foolishness. Our schools, who are made up of really wonderful people who are teachers, you know, I've worked in schools, I've meet these teachers, they love these kids, they want to do the right thing. But to allow political indoctrination to take place in our schools, which does in many schools, not all. I've seen some schools that are much more traditional American, traditional conservative values that are in there. I would not want them to advocate those values other than to say America is our country and salute the flag and, you know, the national anthem and all that kind of stuff. You know, patriotism. Patriotism is good. Patriotism is correct. It is a healthy thing. But in our schools today, and lots of them, patriotism is hatred. We look at all the states now that are looking at this critical race theory. And we've talked about this before, critical race theory. It's okay and it's appropriate for us to understand our past, but we have to understand both sides of it. Now, that was what I had talked about in a previous episode, understanding both sides of things here. But do we always do that? Do we always look at both sides? We don't, right? The media picks one side. The prevalent culture picks one side of an argument, and that is the only side of the argument that is permitted. Anything else in this day and age subjects you to cancel. We will cancel you because you disagree with what we think is correct. And that is that's extremely dangerous. That is extremely dangerous to all of us and to our lives. As I go through the news feeds here, I'm looking at some of these things here, and I'm asking myself, what's going to happen when Joe Biden sits down with Vladimir Putin, and Putin says, hey, you know, I'm not going to do anything against Ukraine, I'm not going to do anything against these areas, and don't worry about it, it's not a problem, and Joe Biden's, oh, okay, and he comes out with a piece of paper. You know, think about history. Anybody ever come out of a meeting with a tyrant waving a piece of paper saying, it's peace in our time? Anybody ever do that before? Right. All right, so I'm afraid that that's what he's going to come. Oh, he's not going to attack. And then one day he's going to roll into Ukraine. And what are we going to do? Are we going to sacrifice our troops, our men and women, our valuables, our blood, our treasure to stop him once he's there? What happens when the Chinese decide this is a pretty good moment to roll over Taiwan? Are we actually going to engage the Chinese in a battle? Do we have the wherewithal? Do we have the leadership now to endure what that would mean? Right? I don't know that it would come to nuclear blows. because that would be detrimental to the Chinese as well. Very bad. We have many, many more weapons, and our technology is probably much better. But it could lead to a huge skirmish right there, where we see naval battles and we see American sailors and soldiers killed to protect Taiwan, because that used to mean something. The world used to believe we would go all out for that. I don't know if we would go all out for that now. I don't know that President Biden or our Congress or the rest of our leadership would do anything about it. And this is how evil ascends. This is how tyrannical governments rise, when they see weakness. Now, you might not have liked President Trump. You might not have cared for the way he said things and did things. But the world leaders around this planet knew, no matter what, if he said he was going to do something, he was going to do it. Right? You might not have liked what he said, but he kept these people in check. He put tariffs on the Chinese because they're unfair. He kept President Xi in line, at least to know that if you step out of line, the smack you're going to get is going to be painful. And therefore, he had to think about it. When you have someone who's weak in leadership, then you can take a lot more liberties, because you know that that weak leader is probably not going to do the right thing. And if they do, they're going to overreact or underreact. So I don't know that Joe Biden and all of his cohorts who are living in this world of pretend, this world of foolishness, the things that we're worried about in our country right now that we talk about every single day are so absurd that it could lead us to ruin. You know, first of all, we got to get past some of these problems. Does it matter who people love? No, the more love, the better. That's what I say in the world. So I don't care who you marry, who you love. If you're happy together, that's fantastic. Good for you, right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you want to do in life. You can do whatever it is you want to do. You can say whatever you want. But the things we have going on now, shutting down free speech because it's not politically correct, arguing over what bathrooms we should use, arguing over who gets to play on what sports, this is what's consuming us. And this is the things that will consume us when the rest of the world realizes this is a pretty good moment. America is pretty weak right now. Because while we have the most powerful military on the face of the earth, that military does not act independently of the leadership of the country. It has to be directed. They have to have a sense of mission. They have to have something they believe in. And I don't know that they believe in this government or the things that are going on. And I think that is dangerous and detrimental to our country. So I just wanted to look at that for a minute. Now, we've talked here a lot about COVID-19, and I see that New York has now said all the restrictions are lifted. Everything's lifted. Let's get back to work. Let's get back to, if you're vaccinated. So if you're not vaccinated, what? Where do we get these cards? We have to have a card now. You have to show your papers all over America to prove you had this vaccine. How about the shots for young people? Okay, we have some young people in my family here that are trying to decide what we're going to do. Are they going to get the shots? Or are they not going to get the shots? And we're seeing now that there's been millions of young people aged 12 to 16 who've been vaccinated with the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, and we're seeing heart problems with these young people, especially young males. Now, it's only, I think, 512 out of a couple million. But if that's your son, right, who has these heart problems, how long are those heart problems going to last? So I think it's myocarditis, right, and cardiocarditis. Myocarditis is inflammation of the heart muscle. This can last for hours or months. So you have a young person, a young guy, 15, 16, 18 years old, has this this vaccine, and then has myocarditis, which the inflammation of the heart, which could lead to cardiac arrest and death. Well, sure, if it's somebody else's kid, what the hell do you care? What if it's your kid? Is that something that we want? We're demanding now everyone take these vaccines. Everywhere you look, take the vaccine, take the vaccine, take the vaccine. And I'm saying, okay, if they're genuinely believing that that's going to keep us healthy and moving forward, that's one thing. But we don't know, because again, we have to pretend. Follow the science, unless it's not the science we like. It leads us where we don't like, then we're not going to follow the science, right? It's a tough time here in America, and I don't know what we're going to do about that, all right? When we talk about the world, coming apart. We talk about PTSD. When we talk about all of the things that have come to us in this last year, and I've spoken about this a few times because this is important stuff. You know, where are we as a people? As we start to come out of the pandemic, as we start to come out of the COVID restrictions, especially in the blue states, you know, the red states have been coming out faster and faster, and they're going about their business and they're all doing well. But the blue states are now starting to clear up and get clear of all of that nonsense. And how is that going to work out for all of us? You know, are they going to go back to restrictions if the numbers go up? Because I anticipate if it's still out there and there's a huge population that is not vaccinated and will not be vaccinated because they're afraid of the true value of the vaccination. What did I see? I think I said it in the last episode. There was a party, a cruise ship of all vaccinated people. And quite a few of them ended up with COVID from being on the cruise. So how does that work? How do you get your vaccination and still get COVID? We don't have enough answers. We don't have enough truth here. So where is this all leading us as a country? Where is this all leading us as a people? This is my concern today. So one of the things I'm trying to do in this episode, previous episodes, and episodes going down the road is talking to some people who can offer help to all of us. Now, I concentrate a lot of it on my law enforcement brothers and sisters because that is a huge part of what I do. That is where I come from. And law enforcement is at the center of our freedom. Now, think about this for a minute. Law enforcement is at the center of our freedom. If we didn't have law enforcement officers out in the street maintaining order, peace, enforcing the law, think of the chaos we would have in our society. Think of how difficult life would be for all of us if the law enforcement officers really totally backed off, or if we defunded them, or as in some of these mental midgets are saying, get rid of the police altogether. Right? Can you imagine what would happen in your community? You might live in a beautiful community. Imagine if there was no law enforcement, or the cops only responded to certain kinds of things. People could decide they're going to break into your house, steal your stuff, rape and rob you. It doesn't matter. And well, we're not going to make any arrests because it could be violence and we could hurt someone. So therefore, we're just going to send them a note. Dear Mr. Jones, when it's convenient for you, can you turn yourself into the local police for your charges of burglary, theft, and sexual assault of homeowner Mary Ann Jones? We would really like you to do that, you know, if it's convenient for you. Is that the world we're going to come to? Again, we're pretending. We're pretending that get rid of our police, get rid of all of this is going to help us. So when I look at the world going forward, I'm trying to find people that are going to help us understand what we need to know to survive all of this chaos, this craziness. All right. So Amy Morgan is an expert in understanding stress and how stress evolves into people's lives. And she deals a lot with first responders. She's really absolutely amazing. And I'm going to have her on here in a few minutes for you. I want you to listen to what Amy and I talk about. Again, it's in the context of law enforcement is going to be our conversation. That's why I asked her to come on. But in the bigger picture of things, you're going to hear that it's about balance. That's the key. How do we balance all of this negativity that's going on around us, especially for those of us who are more conservative, more to the right, more traditional? We are being attacked on every side, everywhere, by people on the left, socialism, all these anti-American ideals. All of these things are attacking us at our core, right? And that causes a lot of stress. So Amy is talking about that in context of law enforcement. But you're going to see, really, it applies to all of us. We need to find positivity. And she is really a brilliant woman. And I think you're going to like her. I spoke to her a couple of weeks ago. I asked her if she would come on the show, and she said she would, so I really want to introduce you to her, and we'll get to that in a minute. Right now, I want to talk to you a little bit about Healthy Cell. Okay, these are the vitamin supplements, immune boost, and I told you I started taking them. I started feeling better. I thought I actually did really feel better. I was trying to be honest about it to myself and say, you know, does it really feel like it's making a difference? Because I'm a guy that takes supplements. I think you try and eat right, you try and stay healthy, you try and exercise as best you can in this crazy world. But sometimes we do need extra help. And I took the Healthy Cell for a couple of weeks, and I started to notice, without thinking about it, that I was feeling better. Right? I was feeling more upbeat. I think I slept better. I think I felt stronger. I know I definitely felt stronger. My ability to go longer in the day, and I work ridiculous hours. I start at 6 in the morning. Sometimes I don't finish till 6, 7 at night. And I go on and on and on. And I know, by the end of the day, by the afternoon, I start dragging. You know, I start to get tired, and I don't want to slip. I don't want to do that. So I said, this is going to help. Well, I noticed after taking the Healthy Cell for a couple of weeks, I wasn't getting tired in the afternoon like I had previously. So a couple of weeks ago, I said, I'm going to stop taking it now. And let me see if I see a difference. Well, I got to tell you, after a little more than a week, I started to find myself feeling tired again in the afternoon. And I'm saying, wait a minute, is this a real correlation? And I think it was. So I started taking it again. And I'm going again all day long with a lot of energy. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling healthier. Haven't had a problem with, normally I get sinus problems. Now, I don't want to equate it to that. I don't know yet. But it seems like it's making a difference to me. Healthy Cell, Immune Boost. So I'm going to tell you, you know, you hear it on the station here on America Out Loud. They advertise on the station. And I would never tell you that I liked something if I didn't. And I'm trying to do my own experiments here. Now, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. But I started taking them. I felt better. I stopped taking them. I kind of went back to feeling lethargic in the afternoon. Started taking them again. And here I am, you know, a week later. And I feel like I have all this extra energy. So I'm just going to suggest to you that if you hear it, give it a try. If it works for you, I think that's fantastic. I actually like it. I'm going to continue to take it. It comes in, you can do a lot. It comes like a gel. I take it right out of the tube because it tastes pretty good. It's blackberry. So I just want to tell you about Healthy Cell. I think it's important, and I'm glad they're here and they're supporting the show and they're supporting the station. But I want to support them because they're a good product, right? A lot of products out there aren't. Healthy Cell's pretty good. All right. So we're gonna get back to my interview with Amy. I'm going to hook her up here and bring her on in a minute. So I want to thank everybody for being out there. Be positive, right? This is the thing. Be positive. We need to find balance, and that's what we're going to talk about with Amy. Finding balance in our lives between all this chaos, craziness, fear, attacks on our politics and our way of life. We can overcome. Good can overcome. We all pray to our loving God that he looks over us and helps us to get through this tough time. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. We will be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice. Stand by.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Good afternoon, everybody. Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here. So listen, we talk about law enforcement a lot. It is a central part of our society. If we don't have law enforcement, if we don't have the security that a good, decent well-trained law enforcement agency can provide to our community, we see how fast chaos can erupt and actually destroy our lives. We've seen in cities across the country when law enforcement takes a backseat, when they slow down for various reasons of doing what they do, that there's all kinds of problems that erupt in that community. And it ruins everyone's life. And everybody in every community deserves to have a safe and secure future. So one of the things that has been on my mind recently is a concern that I have for the negativity that's been directed towards law enforcement. We see it more now than I ever have. And I've been in the business for 30 years and I've seen it come and go from heroes to zeros and back again. But right now we're kind of at a low point, and officers, I think, are suffering probably quietly. They're dealing with it. You know, we had the Ferguson effect after the Ferguson incident, where officers really just started to be more reactive than proactive. And that is a problem. When officers are not when they're not progressively active in their community, a lot of things go by the wayside and crime goes up. People who break the law are emboldened and they go out, and that affects every single person. And like I said, everybody deserves safety and security and a decent community to raise their children and live with their families. So we want to talk a little bit today about counterbalancing what's going on for our cops, and not say you just have to listen to Lieutenant Joe. You have to go out and find an expert, somebody who's an expert in this area. So who we have today with us is Dr. Amy Morgan. She is the CEO of Academy Hour. They provide mental health training and resources for first responders nationally. Amy has created an online training as well as on-site classes, and has also released a certified peer support leader and teammate training programs, all important things for law enforcement. She also trains counselors to understand the unique culture of first responders through her certified first responder counselor program. She travels all across the country teaching, presenting, and advocating for the mental health of and support of our first responders. So I got to tell you, first of all, Amy, thank you so much for being here with our audience.
Absolutely. Glad to be here. Thanks for asking me.
And, you know, when I look at this, when I read this over, you know, I said I always like to introduce people by what they do. And for the men and women of law enforcement out there, it seems to me you're somebody who actually really does care about them. I got that right?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. It's all I do now.
And how did you come to this, to care about law enforcement? And, you know, you could direct your efforts and your skills anywhere. Why'd you pick law enforcement first responders?
I actually happened to be working at the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation doing training at the time that I finished my master's in counseling, and just decided to teach a couple classes just to see if they were interested. It really hit home with a lot of them. I really was seeing a lot of things that they were, the crime scenes they were going out to work and that sort of thing. And then the people that worked in the ICAC unit, Internet Crimes Against Children, were friends of mine, and I got to talking about what they do all day, and I realized there was a real need here. And in Oklahoma, where I happen to be, they're required to take mental health training, 2 hours of mental health training every year. But it's how to work with other people, the general public that has, you know, their mental health calls. There's nothing addressing officer mental health. And so I just kind of gradually got into it and realized there was a big need, and I had a lot of attendance at the trainings, and so which showed a lot of interest, and people coming up and talking to me later, telling their stories, and just little by little got more enmeshed in the community law enforcement agencies, and started teaching SWAT school, just different classes, training there and hearing from them and learning about them and getting to know them and their needs. And so it just really called to me, and it's just where I focused. It's just where I went with my counseling.
That's amazing, because it is really needed in law enforcement. I mean, we go back, I started in 1985, and I was not somebody who just grew up wanting to be in law enforcement. I had family members who were in law enforcement. I always thought I was going to do something different. But as you know, you grow up, you mature, you see the world differently. And I had an opportunity. I used to sit and be one of those people that would yell and scream at the news, you know, and then my wife says, "Hey, why don't you find some way to do something about it instead of yelling and screaming?" And law enforcement became a natural outlet for me to go and try and, you know, protect and serve and do the right thing. And I loved my career. But what I found was things that I was not part of my life. This whole gallows humor thing that the cops do, you know, they go to a horrific, terrible scene.
and they make jokes about it. And if the, I always said, if the public ever heard us, they would think we were crazy.
Yes.
But the reality is that I come to learn that that's really a coping mechanism. Am I right? That's how you deal with these horrible things.
Very much. I thought the same thing. I would go to lunch with these guys at the bureau, and they'd be talking about the crime scene they just left and joking about the guy's brain on the sidewalk. And I thought, and I would say, like, you guys are, that's, you really shouldn't joke about that. You know, I didn't get it at the time. That is, it's, you can't sit and they're not allowed to say, or haven't been allowed to say, I'm really affected by what I saw. Instead, they have, but they want to say something about it because it's right there and they're dealing with it. And so they make jokes about it. The joking is okay. Anger and joking are the two things that are okay, right? You could be angry about something going on in your industry, and you can be, you can make jokes about it. Jokes are a way of communicating. If someone's joking about wanting to kill themselves, well, they're saying something about it. If they're joking about a crime scene that they saw, it's because it's on their mind. They're trying to communicate in some way that's permissible to communicate that they're going through something about it.
Right. And that's exactly the experience that I had. You know, there's so much that can be packed into this conversation with law enforcement. You know, in my opening, I said, you know, they're really a pivotal part of our society, law enforcement. And I think when I see that joking, you're right. There's only so many ways that you're allowed to say things, because you got to be the tough guy, the tough girl. You know, you're supposed right. to, it doesn't affect you. It doesn't do this. It doesn't do that. And early on in my career, a kid I grew up with, used to play guitars with all the time. This guy became a cop in another town and got himself in a little trouble with a dispatcher he shouldn't have gotten involved with. And then he did some other things to, you know, cause problems for himself. And he ended up killing himself. Like, and that was just shocking to me. I'm never the kind of guy, I never considered suicide. If I had that many problems, I would take off and go somewhere else and do something. I would never kill myself. And this guy did. And then shortly thereafter, another cop I knew killed himself. And you start to see it then, once you're involved in it, and you hear everybody knows a cop that killed himself. Right. So it's cops and dentists. Cops and dentists are always one and two. So do you have any idea why dentists would be up there with law enforcement? I have no
idea. Think about everybody coming to see you in your work every day and telling you they hate you.
Well, and that's what someone else said. You know, it's not a
fun
job.
I hate the dentist. I hate going to the dentist. It's the same thing with cops. It's the self-fulfilling prophecy. It's this negativity we're talking about. You hear this all day long, every day. You become it. Anything you hear about yourself, you become. And you know, eventually, unless you know purposefully to go against it, to counterbalance that negativity, they don't go, oh, I love the dentist. I'm so glad I'm here. That would make you love your job. But if every day you went to work and everybody that came into your office one by one said, I don't want to be here. I hate you. You're hurting me. I hate the dentist. You go home thinking all I did was make people hate me and hurt people all day.
Right. No. So who would know that a podiatrist would be a better medical career than a dentist? Well, I'm glad that you gave me that answer, because even though that's jokingly, when I teach this, I say, hey, you know, talk to these cops. You know, we kill ourselves. You know, look around this room. Statistically, in the next 10 years, one of us is going to kill ourselves. And who's that going to be? Yeah. And it's a frightening thing. And I always mention the dentist thing, and they always say, why? Why dentist? Well, now we have a doctor telling us why, because people don't.
Well,
like
I'm not actually a doctor. You said Dr. Amy, and I'm not quite there, but hey, we're gonna, don't want to pretend I'm a doctor. No, okay. I have two half doctorates and I'm working on it. So.
Well, that's perfect. I'm sure you'll get there then. But your expertise speaks for itself.
Right. Okay.
So,
thanks.
So when I talk about that, And I want to talk about how we can counterbalance this. First of all, what's going on in society in general, how officers can view themselves in the light of this. And then, you know, in their job, and then again, maybe in the office and what goes on there. And then at home, what their families can do to help them to recognize maybe these signs of stress and difficulty. And, yeah. and I'll tell you a little story that really drove it home for me. And we can probably build it off of there. There was this kid in town. He was a ne'er-do-well kind of kid, probably a little slow, 28 years old or whatever, and came from a family that had some difficulties. Wasn't a bad kid, but he always got himself in stupidity kind of troubles, you know. And he lost his license for drinking, because that's one of his ways of coping with what he was dealing with. And he would drive to, of all places, to a go-go bar every day and drink and give away all his money and then ride his bicycle home. Well, right. One night he's riding his bicycle home, going between a strip mall to get to the neighborhood. He hits a speed bump, goes down, busts his head, and he dies right there on the ground.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and he was found a few hours later by the garbage men coming through to pick up garbage. Hey, there's a guy laying here. And I get called out. I was a detective at the time, brand new, and I go out. And there's me, a senior dog, an old guy who's been out there, who knew this guy, and two young guys. And we're all standing around looking at this guy. And again, this was new for me. You know, I'm now a detective. I'm going to do the dead guy, right? I'm also a human being.
Right.
And my first thought was that even though this kid lay in here, a horrible way to die, laying in the street with your beer bottle, drunk, you know, fall off a bike. But he's somebody's son. You know, he's somebody's family. And my first thought was to just throw a blessing at him. You know, hey, God bless you, you know, whatever, you know. Right. Then it also made me feel a little better, right? What am I supposed to do in a situation? Well, the senior guy standing there, and this goes with the gallows humor. He looks at me, he goes, "You're saying a prayer for that guy? Are you kidding? You know what that guy was all about?" And I said, "Listen, I get that, but he's also a human being. And I feel bad that he's laying here dead. We have to go tell his mother. Right. It's going to be a miserable scene." When I said that, the two young guys blessed themselves.
Did they?
And then later on, I said to them, you know, "Why'd you do that?" And they're like, "Well, we didn't want to do it in front of him, but since you did it, we thought it was okay." And I said, wow, people in this profession, we need some guidance. We need to say it's okay to say that this affects me, this bothers me, and it doesn't make me less. I mean, I was in a role where I'm a detective, right? So they kind of looked up to that. And if I could do it, then it was okay, you know?
Right, for sure.
So what can we do when we're out there working and we see the society right now is against these cops? What can they do to counterbalance that?
Yeah, so it's exactly what you said, leadership. Lead by example from wherever you are. So anybody can be a leader. You know, this is not John Maxwell leadership, whatever, but anybody can be a leader from wherever you are. And especially in this where the reason officers don't go get help is that it's a peer pressure. The brotherhood is fantastic. The brotherhood, sisterhood, it is fantastic as far as a support system. You've got, you know, everybody's got your back and all of that, which is fantastic. It's great, especially when no one else seems to. But it's also a peer pressure environment. Everybody's looking around. I teach a lot of this in class, that there are these, you know, you see trauma every day and these are the responses. There's this list of responses that are the natural responses to trauma or to seeing all these difficult scenes, someone laying there in the street. There's going to be responses to that, natural human responses. And you're all supposed to hide that because you see no one else doing it. Well, no one else seems to be having nightmares or no one else is reliving this in their head or keeps picturing that kid I saw or whatever it is. But they're looking at you saying the same thing. You're holding it up. You're looking tough. You're not talking about it. So they're looking at you saying, well, you know, detective's got, he's got his shit. Can I cuss on here? He's got his stuff together. And, you know, he doesn't seem to be affected by it at all. So I got to suck it up. I got to live up to that. You're all trying to live up to the facade that each of you is portraying. So you're presenting that you're fine because you think you're supposed to present that you're fine. And you are supposed to be fine. We want you to be fine, but just pretending you're fine doesn't make something fine. If you were to get help and get counseling and process the trauma and do all of those things that actually heal you and restore you back to that strong state, then you're in a great place and you are okay. Something happens. You're not like way down in the muck and then something bad happens. You're up here feeling okay and something bad happens and you don't have as far to go to get back up to okay. Seeing all that negative, you know, people often, I use that word counterbalance for a reason, because people are like, oh, I need balance in my life. I need, yeah, you need equal parts of family and work and blah, blah, blah. And that's balance. But when you're seeing all that negative, and it's not just the dead guy laying in the street that's a negative, it's also the public criticism and the, you stop, you know, patrol cops, stop some nice lady who happens to be speeding. She turns into not a nice lady because she's been stopped. So even good people are crappy to officers sometimes. You get that all the time. It's that dentist thing. It's like, oh, I'm just walking up to the window to tell you that you need to slow down and you're going to be crappy to me. So they're prepared for people to be crappy to them all day. You can't have a balance of that. You don't want equal parts of that and good in your life. You need to counterbalance. You have so much good in your life and positive and all the things go, you know, I tell people to volunteer and that seems counterproductive because you're giving and giving. But when you volunteer somewhere, people say, thank you. When you're a cop, people don't typically say, thank you. Thanks for giving me a ticket. Thanks for keeping me in line and making me slow down. Like, they're not thanking you. They're criticizing you. You've got to have supportive friends, supportive family, and even outside the department, you know, just people that believe in you and encourage you. That's counterbalance. Doing things you enjoy, you know, hobbies and all of those things, thinking positive thoughts, listening to positive things, not reading all the negative on social media and not balancing it out with positive. You got to outweigh the negative with the positive. That's the counterbalance. Right. So it gives it not an equality, but a, you know, much more in the positive.
Sure. That makes perfect sense to me, because if you fill yourself up with negative, you're going to be negative. You know, so right, I kind of get that. And also, what about, you know, the idea of compartmentalizing? I mean, that's something that I realized that I saw a meme one time, and it was another first responder. It was an ambulance driver sitting like in the back of his truck with the doors open, and he had his head in his hands. And obviously the picture was depicting that he had been to some horrific scene, and there's all ghosts all around him. The little kid who died in an accident, the person who died of a heart attack. And you could see the stress on his face. And I'm saying, if we don't learn to deal with those ghosts, if we don't put them in their right perspective, they'll come back and haunt you. And this is what I see over the course of a career. It's not one incident that leads an officer to put a gun in their mouth. It's a slow and steady drip of these constant negativity, like you're saying, that causes this buildup over time. And if we don't learn to vent that along the way, it becomes a cancer that grows quietly and slowly in you until you see the world negatively. You feel negative. That's the aspect of the job I never liked, that people become very critical of everything. So how can people put that stuff into perspective? How can you counterbalance those thoughts of the public hates me? That what a terrible scene I saw. How do you actually do that?
Yeah. So to address a few things you just said, that the one is cumulative trauma. It's called cumulative trauma. And it's, you see that incident, you see that person, that scene, whatever you walk in on, that becomes part of you. And it accumulates. It does. If they're not independent, even though you guys do compartmentalize, what that means is you're not facing it. You're dissociating, you're separating yourself from it, sticking in this little box, try to put the lid on. But I equate that to, you've seen the game Whack-A-Mole. Mm-hmm. You can put all those down for a bit, but after a while, you have so much in there. It actually, so you're dissociating. I'm going to sound mental healthy here for a second, but you're dissociating from it. You're separating yourself from it. That's the extreme result of that is DID, dissociative identity disorder, or multiple personalities. And it's because trauma blocks your brain. I can explain that, but it keeps you from moving forward, and it doesn't process trauma. Your brain holds that, it locks it all up and creates a kind of a block in the cogs and the wheels. So dissociating separates that, but it's going to pop out at some point. You can process that through things like EMDR therapy, which is kind of like REM sleep that processes what happened during the day for you. If you don't get REM sleep, you're not processing things. But if you do, you wake up with kind of clarity. That's what EMDR does. It helps process that trauma and makes it not stick there and accumulate. It helps you. I use an example of a stack of books. Like, you have a stack of books on your arm, and this is my kind of suicide example, but you have this stack of books. We all carry around some stressors, some books, two or three books or whatever all the time. And then, you know, the car breaks down, whatever, there's a book, you fix the car, you take the book off. So it's this kind of ever flowing little stack of books. It's when those books start stacking up higher and higher, and you have so much that you can't deal with, that you're overwhelmed. Your brain has more to deal with than it's capable of dealing with. And so DID is, it creates a separate personality to handle that side of stuff, the trauma or the whatever it is that's overwhelming. So your brain is actually creating two people within you to deal with the stuff. And so that's the extreme version. You have to process that trauma, that cumulative trauma, and heal from it. Otherwise, it does just accumulate, and you're carrying all that around, and it just gets heavier and heavier. Sure. And you're still trying to function as if none of it ever happened. Sure. And it's not possible. So you're hiding it. You're using those bad coping skills and all of that.
I think we can see that in everyday life, people who even aren't law enforcement officers.
Right.
You know, maybe you have a problem at home, you have a family problem, an illness, a sickness, a problem, and then you have a job problem, and you have another, and it just starts to build one on another. And it's just that one last straw that can set people right. off, because it's a cumulative effect. So if I'm a coworker of somebody, are there signs and symptoms I can look for that say maybe somebody's not coping well, that maybe we need to actually say something? But the problem, and I know my brother and sister officers out there going to say, the problem with law enforcement is if you come forward and say, I'm having a problem, the first thing they want to do is take your gun and badge, and they'll make you better, but then you don't get to be a cop no more. So people kind of hold back on that too. So what would I be looking for in a coworker, co-cop that say, maybe there's a problem here, I need to maybe reach out?
Yeah. So to address the it's a valid fear, because it does happen. And that now it's typically happening because leadership doesn't understand that. I have a friend who used this example of the NFL team. You own the NFL team. That's your department. That's your cops. And you are going to give them the best therapist, the best physical therapist, the best nutrition, the best, all of these things to make them at their best, because you want them out there playing at their best. I loved that analogy, because that's what you need for your department. But when leadership doesn't do that, when the command staff doesn't say, hey, you had a bad incident yesterday, that was a bad call. We all know what's a bad call, what's a everyday thing, but the everyday things, if they were just everyday things and that's all you had, would be everyday things. But you had a bad call in there, and it makes the everyday thing worse, harder, because you're dealing with that bad call. If you don't process it and face it, and leadership says, suck it up, just go to the next call, you're going to have people that are just like, oh, I just, you know, stabbed you in the arm. That's okay. Keep going. Okay. I just stabbed you in the side. Keep going. Okay. You just tripped over that and broke your femur. Keep going. That's what leadership does now. And that's why people are like, no, I'm running. Like, I had a guy in like, it was like this job interview story I heard one time, where this guy is running with a pebble in his shoe and it's kind of uncomfortable, and he's trying to, you know, win the race or trying to do whatever. And the guy says, would you try to prove you can run as far as you can with a pebble in your shoe because it makes you tough? Or would you stop and take the pebble out so that you can actually run well and win the race? It's that. It's if leadership would say, you had a bad call, let's stop, take the pebble out of your shoe, let's get you healed, and then let's get you back in the game, and you're back on the race, you could still win the race. But they don't, it's when leadership doesn't understand that they say, okay, well, you're unstable now because you're not dealing with that. You're not pretending anymore that you're dealing with that. Okay. We need to not have you out there with a gun and a badge. We need to sit you down here at a desk and not take the risk, to have the liability of you out there. Instead of thinking that, they need to say, okay, we're going to make you even better. Like, you were great before, but now you've been injured. Let's restore you and let's get you back here to really strong and being the best player and MVP and all this, and get you back out there. So the reality is that not everybody understands that.
Let me ask you this question as a professional. For the law enforcement administrators that are listening to this right now, and you're right, I think there is that concern for liability, and there's also that the reality they don't understand this, and they don't want to get in trouble. Is it possible for somebody to have a bad reaction to a built up bunch of things that happened in their career, get some help, and then be fine to go back out with a gun and a badge and not be a concern? Can they heal from these kind of things?
Absolutely. That's a yes. That's an unequivocal yes. Yes. That's what therapy does. That's what EMDR does, is it takes that injury and actually takes the time to sit there. And I use the example of an ER. If you gashed your arm off and it was like hanging by a tendon, you'd run to the ER and you'd get help, and you wouldn't want the doctor to just stitch up the outside skin so that it looked like it was on there. You'd want them to restore your arm to its full capabilities. That's what should be done with mental injuries as well. You see a bad call, that's a mental injury. You go and you get help and you get processed through that, and suddenly you feel better and you're strong and you understand it all better, and you're not weighed down by it. You're out there and you're doing your best, and you're like one of the best officers because you've been through something, you've seen something, and you've healed from it, and your worldview, we're talking about that negativity, your worldview changes because of all of this, but your worldview looks different. the way you handle your calls looks different. It looks you're doing a better job because you're in a great place. Those things can't, trauma and negativity can be healed. And it's not even that, I'm going to say that's not that difficult, but it's like, when I say it can be healed, it sounds like a huge overwhelming process. It's not. If you start, and I want to teach, I have a training and teaching like academies to teach like what you'll go through, what it will do to you, what the job will do to you, and how to prevent it and how to heal it. But if you go in saying, okay, I'm on a law enforcement career count now, I'm going to find a counselor immediately. I'm a rookie. I'm a cadet. I'm going to go in. I'm going to find a counselor. And you have that relationship established. Maybe you don't have anything to talk about. You may talk about, you know, your coworkers or your childhood or whatever it is. You establish that relationship and that rapport. And then when you do have a critical incident or a hard call, you just go see the counselor that you already have a good relationship with. You process that call, you move on, and you're in a better place.
That's excellent. Now that obviously, like I said in the beginning, this is a gigantic topic. There's so many things to pull apart here. We only have a couple minutes left in this particular segment, but when I'm seeing this, it sounds like setting up in advance, preparing so that people have someone they can go talk to is really the key. So would you suggest that departments take a look at preparing something in advance? Maybe in our town, we had a human services department that had a psychologist in charge and then a bunch of counselors that were really good, really liked the cops. And we had an ongoing relationship with them. So when something happened, we would just call, they would come and talk to them, whatever. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, absolutely. Anything that where leadership says we have this and you should use it or you're expected to use it. There's a difference there between saying we're okay with you using it or we will let you use it. And the leadership saying, no, we expect this. You wouldn't say to your NFL players, hey, you're injured. We have a guy on here. If you want to look at physical therapy, like you can. If you if you want to be a baby about it, you know what I mean? Like, or you can say like, this is what we expect. We want you at your best. You saw something difficult or you do regularly. You all need to be involved in counseling. Like you all need to be going and processing this. Imagine if your entire department, all the officers were out there seeing what they're seeing and doing what they're doing and then going and getting help and processing and seeing great counselors, culturally competent counselors that get them, that actually help and are beneficial. Imagine what a great department, what a strong police force that would be.
Amy, thank you very, very much. Listen, I wish you'd come back on again.
I will. Absolutely.
Your voice is needed. I know people can find your main website at www.academyhour.com. Academyhour.com. That's the way to go. If you have information, you want to find out about what Amy's doing, how she can help your department. She has some amazing training programs. She can come right to your PD and help you out. And that would be info@academyhour.com. Amy, thank you very, very much for being here. I really appreciate it today. And I'll be back in touch again and we will talk some more because this is what's needed in law enforcement and we're going to help make everybody better. That's our goal.
Great. Thank you so much.